Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores on 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Katie Service, and this is a recap of all of the news from the University of Connecticut from this past week. This broadcast is in collaboration with UConn's newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run television station, UCTV. Husky Nation News is a broadcast that informs the public about recent events and news within and around the UConn area. It will include original reports from the WHUS News Committee, the Daily Campus, and news packages from UCTV. We will also be discussing local and global news, what events are coming up in the Storrs Mansfield area, and we'll provide some insight on UConn's fall athletic teams. Now, to get right into our show this morning, we are going to invite a WHUS News Committee member for the first time, actually, on our show, Jack Ross. Jack, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm happy to be on. Thank you.
We're happy to have you. So, Jack, you recently wrote a story that's been published on our website about the UConn parking system, like the new booting system that they've implemented. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so UConn is attempting to battle the parking issue that they have where people aren't getting parking passes, which is leading to people getting tickets, and people are deciding not to pay these tickets. So in the past, UConn has resorted to towing and other things related. But now they've tried to implement something called a smart boot, which is a new car boot where it basically locks the car down. It's just like a regular car boot, except it comes with a QR code, and basically the idea of the car boot is you have to scan the QR code and you have to pay $50 along with $200 or more of the parking tickets that they haven't paid yet. So it's a good way for UConn to get money out of the situation because in the past, towing wasn't really doing the trick, so it's a way for them to try and get some of the money back from the parking tickets that haven't been paid.
Right, and so when it comes to getting your car booted, is there a certain amount of tickets like you have to have accumulated, like in like financially? Like how many tickets do you have to have in order to get booted?
I think tickets range in value on how much a ticket is. I think it depends on where you're parked and how long you've been parked there, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I know the total is $200 or more of tickets.
Wow.
Those are the only people that are eligible for the smart boot. Mm-hmm. You have to have at least $200 in tickets.
Wow. And who did you end up interviewing for this article? I believe you reached out to Steph Reitz, one of the UConn spokespeople. For comment on the story.
Yeah, so I emailed Stephanie Reitz, and she's been really helpful in the past with some articles that I've done, and she helped me with this one. I just asked her some clarifying questions about the smart boots and how they work and what UConn's requirements were for what they are doing. And she basically gave me a rundown. She made sure to, in my original email, I asked her what UConn's doing to track down on students, and she made sure to say that it's not just students, it's everybody that's parking. So, suggesting that there might be faculty or staff that is also included with the people not paying parking tickets. And that's about it. I basically was just asking clarifying questions, making sure to fact check basically what I was writing about, along with just her saying that, yeah, it's a pretty wide problem at campus, and it's not only students that are part of the problem.
That's really interesting, Jack. So I know you mentioned that previously they had been towing cars. Do you know why they decided to switch from towing to this boot method?
Yeah, so I found some information from a Yahoo News is what I used. I basically, when I was writing the article, I looked up the topic of the article and basically just skim through everything related. And Yahoo News had a lot of good information. They had a lot of information about someone named Andy Kelly, who's a member of the university's facilities operations. And he basically said that the, quote, the problem remained. They still had a large number of unpaid citations. They referencing to people that haven't paid their parking tickets. And Kelly said, and we've had a significant problem with folks just not buying permits and willing to challenge the system. So he was basically saying that the parking tickets aren't getting paid when they're towed. And yeah, your car getting towed is a major inconvenience, but these smart boots are a way for UConn not only to hold your car, but also for you to pay the outstanding ticket balance that these people have.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and thank you so much for coming on and talking a bit about this story and all the information that you gathered while you were writing it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So now we're going to transition to a few other stories happening in the UConn area. UConn Health is currently preparing to submit a bid for Waterbury Hospital as a part of the Prospect Medical Holdings bankruptcy sale, as reported by CT Insider. This bid would forgive all or most of the roughly $130 million of back taxes Waterbury owes the state. The state would take on $300 million in debt for Waterbury and would need additional subsidy for the state budget of $25 million a year for multiple years, according to the article. The Waterbury expansion would double the current inpatient capacity of UConn Health's own John Dempsey Hospital in Farmington. UConn Health also happens to be in discussions with Day Kimball and Bristol Hospitals to create a new public health care system for the state, as confirmed on Tuesday. The organization is considering purchasing both hospitals for a total of $400 million, according to CT Mirror. This new system would be called the Connecticut Healthcare System, powered by UConn Health. Now, another big story with UConn that came out earlier this week. A UConn and Yale-led quantum technology proposal is one of 15 national finalists for a multi-million dollar grant from the National Science Foundation. The proposal focuses on new ways to support economic growth in regions that have not fully developed technologically over the past few decades, according to the U.S. National Service Science Foundation website. Winning proposals receive a two-year grant from the foundation of up to $15 million and will be eligible for additional funding for the next 8 years, according to WTNH. Quantum CT received a $1 million development grant from the foundation through UConn in 2023, which has launched many projects since then. This co-led organization focuses on building Connecticut into a leading accelerator of quantum technology, as reported by WTNH. Now we're going to throw the mic over to Assistant News Director Rhea Kowalski. Rhea, what is going on in local news?
Okay, so the first bit of news that I have is the Celebrate Mansfield Festival that takes place on September 27th from 2 to 8 p.m., so this is next week. It happens every year and features a bunch of different activities. These include food, crafts, activity booths, as well as event volunteer opportunities. The event will also feature live music from the blues rock and soul inspired all night boogie band, which will begin at 6 p.m. in the Austin Family Foundation Pavilion on Betsy Patterson Square. The opener for this band will be Ruby Left Stop at 5 p.m. Visitors are encouraged to bring lawn chairs or blankets, and the festival is free and open to everyone. Staying in the Mansfield area, this past Tuesday, state police said that a driver was left with minor injuries following a car crash into a business early morning on Stafford Road. Police were called to the scene at around 2:15 a.m., and authorities say that the vehicle hit Route 32 Liquors and a utility pole, which was since removed after the accident. Due to the utility pole, repairs in the intersection caused it to be closed for several hours, but is now up and running again. Finally, in the Mansfield Senior Center is celebrating their 50th anniversary, and the original open house was in 1975. It has since become a place of gathering and events. Last year, the center had around 850 individuals ages 55 and older, and they are excited to keep welcoming new members, that which is a free membership from any town. All right, that is all I have for local news.
Thank you so much, Rhea. Now we're going to get into our state and global news report for this week. We have a few follow-up stories in, you know, kind of similar to what we were talking about last week. So big news about late night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel broke this week, being indefinitely suspended as of Wednesday by ABC after making comments about Charlie Kirk's death, as reported by the Associated Press. Now, during his Monday evening monologue, Kimmel's comments suggested that Kirk's alleged killer, Tyler Robinson, may have been a pro-Trump Republican. Quote, "The MAGA gang is desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it," quote, said Kimmel. The show has since been on air since 2003, starting on ABC and now through Nexstar Communications Group. ABC-affiliated stations said they would not air the show as Kimmel's comments are, quote, "offensive and insensitive at a critical time in our nation's political discourse," end quote, according to Andrew Alford, president of Nexstar's broadcasting division. Kimmel's contract is up in May of 2026. However, ABC's statement did not specifically state why the show was preempted, according to the AP. Shortly after the initial news broke, President Donald Trump wrote on social media platform Truth Social, writing, quote, "Congratulations to ABC for finally having the courage to do what had to be done. Kimmel has zero talent and worse ratings than even Colbert, if that's possible. That leaves Jimmy and Seth, two total losers on fake news NBC," end quote. Earlier in the day, FCC Chairman Brendan Carr said that Kimmel appeared to be intentionally misleading the public that Robinson was a right-wing Trump supporter, as reported by the AP. Carr also said that he found Kimmel's comments, quote, "truly sick," and had reason to hold him accountable. Carr has launched several investigations of outlets that have angered Trump, and the president has sued numerous media organizations for negative coverage. Now, to transition a bit from some global news into some state wide news. Last week, we discussed the recent requests made by State Attorney General William Tong to the WNBA about obtaining documents about the Connecticut Sun's potential sale. This week, we have an update for you all. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver spoke at a conference on Tuesday and came to the defense of the WNBA, following the claims that the league may be illegally interfering with the sale of the professional team. The owner of the Sun, the Mohegan Tribe, have reached separate agreements with a Boston and Hartford group with plans to sell the team for $325 million. The WNBA reportedly told the Tribe that its Board of Governors would not approve of the sale, claiming that a buyer does not have the right to move the team from Mohegan Sun Arena without league approval, according to the Hartford Courant. An offer of $250 million was offered by the league to purchase and sell the Sun to a buyer who would move it to a market such as Houston. The state of Connecticut has since proposed a bid that would see it take a minority stake in the team and split games between Hartford and Uncasville. Silver told Front Office Sports, quote, "The Mohegan Tribe has every right to sell the team in their market. But then we started to be contacted by people in Boston and elsewhere saying that there was a suggestion that they could buy a team in one market and take it to another. That's sort of black letter law in sports leagues. You can't do that. You're buying the market. Teams have different values in different markets, and we view those other markets as expansion markets," end quote. The city of Hartford, nor did Boston, apply for an expansion bid. However, three new teams will be brought to Philadelphia, Cleveland, and Detroit. With the potential relocation of the Connecticut Sun still being up in the air, we will be sure to update you all as more information is released. Now we're going to throw the mic over to our sports director, Vinny Carbone. Vinny, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Katie?
I'm good. Is there a lot going on in sports this week?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, we do know Paige Becker's WNBA Rookie of the Year. Let's clap it up.
Yeah.
UConn, first ever school to ever produce a NBA Rookie of the Year and a WNBA Rookie of the Year ever. So it's, UConn's still doing great things. And I'm also in a good mood because I don't have a car and I'm not getting smart booted or whatever it's called. The one time that I'm happy I don't have a car on campus. But it's Carbone's Court. You have all entered Carbone's Court. I'm your host, Vinny Carbone. Let's get right into it. Let's start with women's soccer. They've improved to 4-2-1 and grabbed their second home win of the season this past weekend. A 3-1 victory over the Maine Black Bears on Sunday was a great confidence booster for this team as they go into conference play. Naya Osio scored her first goal of the season, an amazing half volley to start the scoring. Then A yellow card on the opposing keeper after a collision in the box gave UConn a penalty shot where sophomore Taylor Jenkins increased the UConn lead to 2. And finally, to top things off, Chioma Okafor scored her third goal of the season on a breakaway opportunity. They open up their conference play tomorrow at 7 p.m. versus St. John's. Now over to men's soccer. They are 5-0-3, still unbeaten. In one game since last week, which was a 1-1 draw against Harvard, Jack Ross was actually on that call with Aditya Welling. And it was a very back-and-forth, dramatic game. Charlie Holmes opened up the scoring in the 23rd minute, recording his third goal of the season. Then, only 12 minutes later, he was given a straight red card for a dangerous high-foot play. So you could have to play the remainder of the game, the 55 minutes remaining, with only 10 men. So things were not looking too bright for them. But then, in the 70th minute, the opposing player on Harvard was given a straight red for some type of a similar reason, a foot in the air. So then it was all even out for the rest of the game for the remaining 20 minutes, but then Harvard scored. So it ended up being a 1-1 draw. UConn plays at Akron tonight at 7 p.m. Now over to football. For the second week in a row, UConn loses an overtime thriller, this time versus Delaware at Delaware. These football games have truly been amazing, though. UConn took the lead in this one 38-35 with under 10 minutes to go in the fourth until Delaware's Nate Reed hit a 43-yard field goal, which knotted the score at 38 as regulation expired. Then in OT, UConn did score a field goal. They were the first ones to score. It was looking hopeful for them until a four-play scoring drive from Delaware led to a touchdown and pushed UConn down to 1-2 on the season. They play at home versus Ball State tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Jack Ross and Aditya Welling are also on that call. Sorry, Jack Ross and Seth Richards are on that call. Seth Richards' first broadcast of the year. Let's go, Seth, if you're listening, maybe. Now, my favorite part of Carbone's Court, the trivia section. Everyone, let's lock in. Last week's question, we already know the answer, or we don't know yet, but UConn women's soccer team has only played the University of Maine 3 times in history. What year was their first ever meeting? That was 2006. Congratulations if you got that right. I doubt any of you did, because you don't know ball like me. But now this week, this is a very gettable question. And the reason I read this question and do this question is because yesterday I saw AZ Fudd driving in a electric truck with this brand all over it. So just listen. What hair company has a partnership with UConn, specifically making advertisements with players on the women's basketball team? Once again, what hair company has a partnership with UConn, specifically making advertisements with players on the women's basketball team, most notably AZ Fudd and Paige Beckers? This is a gettable question, guys. I hope everyone gets it, everyone listening. But that's all for Carbone's Court. I won't waste any more of your time. I'll send it back to Katie.
Thank you, Vinny. I think I know the answer to the trivia question.
Don't say it.
I won't say it, but I'm pretty sure all of us in this room, all of our friends in studio today all know the answer to that question. So for once, we actually know what the trivia is. So now we're going to get into our interview segment of the show for today. And we are so excited to welcome back USG President and Comptroller Billy Lipinski and Andy Zhang, but not in that order. Billy is the Comptroller and Andy is the President, so excuse me for the little confusion there. Hi guys, how are you today?
We are so good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to have you guys back and be back here in studio with us.
And we're glad to be back.
Yeah, and talk about all things USG.
Yes, and thanks so much for having us back.
Yes, of course. So based on the conversation that we had on what we really wanted to discuss today, how change happens through a university setting. And I didn't know who wanted to start, but you've had a few of your meetings happening over the past few weeks. So how does change happen through a university setting, and what does it look like?
And I think this is something that I really wanted to come on and talk about, because I think with how USG operates and how we talk about advocacy and making change within a university setting, there's a lot of nuances that I think that students don't understand or aren't aware of. But I wanted to talk about this a little bit through a lot of our past initiatives and a lot of our future initiatives that we're planning on right now. Mm-hmm. For example, the university operates on a large time scale. So as students, we tend to have 4-year cycles. But as a university, they tend to operate on 5- and 10-year plans. And so it can be difficult to figure out how students really fit into that cycle when the turnover is so hard. And I think that within USG, what we've really seen is that if in order to make change on a large scale at UConn, at a place like this, it really requires a lot of good faith from the people that are coming in, from the people that are the next leaders, and that passing the torch that really happens. An example of this is that our Period of Box initiative that we've been doing every single year. So how that has usually been going is that every year we fund $60,000, I think, or is $60,000 right? Or how much money do you put
in? Yeah, it's usually anywhere between like $45,000 and $60,000.
Yeah, okay. And we provide these free menstrual products to students, and they're able to get them, and it's been a really successful initiative for the past few years. It's been so successful that the universities themselves have decided to take it on, and right now in the fall, they're rolling out a program where they're going to be putting out these menstrual products in all bathrooms. And it's been something that has only been able to happen because USG has been able to continue championing it year after year after year. And it's something that I'm seeing that within my role and that I'm learning is that in order for me to make meaningful change and have a meaningful legacy at UConn, it really requires for me to be able to make sure that people who are coming after me believe in my vision and believe in what we're doing and why we're doing it. And this is something that I'm really seeing with a lot of the initiatives that we're starting. So, for example, something that we're really trying to do is getting free legal services for students. Mm-hmm. I think that there's been a lot of issues that students have had with legal issues relating to, for example, off-campus housing, tenant rights, maybe even with parking at the university, especially now with immigration and that kind of stuff. And so I think it's really critical for students to have legal services. And I think that with a lot of the problems that we're facing right now, right, I think what I found is that and the solution is often a lot easier than it seems. And I think that so much of the problems that we're facing can be solved through a simple ask on a very much more smaller scale. I know that students have a lot of complaints about the FlexPass system and how what you can and can't get. And a lot of the changes that actually happened for this year was through USG. It was as simple as we had the director of dining, Mike White, come to USG. He came to Senate. We talked with him. We talked about, hey, flex passes are great. Can we add, for example, a smoothie? Can we add, for example, a smaller change? Can we make it more, can we make it better for students? And it was as simple as that. And he said, yes, let's do it. And I think that students sometimes don't remember that we're at an institution where the people who work here are here for the students, right? The university administrators are here for the students. Dining's here for the students. They want to make the student experience better, right? And that's what I found so far is that, at least from my side, a lot of the initiatives that we're trying isn't so much they aren't failing so much so because of a lack of support from an administration. They usually want to make it work. The difficulty then comes from the budget, from the resources, from that side, and they usually try their best to make these things work for both sides, right? And I think that something that I'm really hoping that students are able to take more agency of their own lives. And I think that for so long I kind of also felt this way, where I was just a student and the university was happening to me. But I think that we as students can start to understand that we can also happen to the university, right? We can change the university.
Right.
We can leave our impact on the university, and it's not just the university that has to shape us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really well said, Andy. Yeah. I want to backtrack. I have a few follow-ups for you.
Of course.
One, for the Period Box, you said that that is in all bathrooms. So is that all bathrooms in all academic buildings on campus?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be in all bathrooms, all gender-neutral bathrooms, and I think it's going to be facilities that keeps the uptake because I think in the past it's been like we have the Period Box in our USG office, right?
Mm-hmm.
But part of the difficulty is that when you actually need the menstrual products, you can't really just go to the office, right?
Right.
They need to be in the bathroom, right? So I think that this is also a much better change in terms of accessibility, right? Because you just walk into the bathroom and you're able to get it. And so I think that it should be in all bathrooms. I think it is facilities that is doing the upkeep of it, and it's coming out, I think, next month, I want to say.
And then with the flex passes, that's been a big topic of conversation amongst students.
Yeah.
I know that in our news committee here at WUS, we've been talking about it a lot with the changes to the flex passes. And I don't think people realize that USG was like the key push to change the FlexPass options, and I know that there's some really amazing ones that are now out, and I know that I've already like blown through so many of them because there's like so many great things that you can get. So it's just it's really interesting to hear that that is through you guys and that you guys initiated that change in the dining services plans.
Yeah, and I think this is really specific to dining, but the executive director of dining, Michael White, he is really receptive to a lot of student needs, and I think that like he's the best example of he's a resource that if you talk to him, he'll do whatever he can to provide it and help it. And like I think I see this also because I have a lot of friends that have dietary restrictions, and so when it's difficult in the dining plan, right, to I guess like have a meal that accommodates your life, it can be really difficult and feel really difficult to navigate that kind of dining system, but there is a system where you can talk to Michael White, you can talk to the director, and he'll kind of talk with the chefs at whatever dining hall you're at. So, for example, if you're at McMahon, right, or if you're at Connecticut Hall, he'll talk with the chefs and say, okay, you can pre-order a meal, you can tell the chefs what you want to fit your lifestyle, and they'll make it ahead of time. You just need to give them enough time. And I think that that is a really, really cool option that exists for students who maybe are gluten-free, who can't eat eggs, right? And I think that it's just one of those things where it's like students need to first ask in order to get the solution. But so much of the battle is just having students ask in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that resources like that with the food accommodations of just like talking to dining staff is something that students don't think of when they are thinking about, oh, where am I going to get my next meal from if I need something fully halal certified or I can't have dairy, you know, things like that. So I love that there's things that students can access. I just think that now that we're talking about it, we're spreading awareness about it, which I think has been great. So I kind of wanted to follow up with that on what other past initiatives or current initiatives have you guys either successfully been able to start or are currently in the work of that you're like excited about or things that are through USG that you guys are really proud of?
I think one thing that I think I'm really looking forward to is we're trying to do some sort of partnership with Uber because I think there is this difficulty. Well, both there's two things with transportation, so Uber and scooters.
Okay.
One is with Uber. As more students go off campus, there comes a need of like how you're gonna, if you live off campus, you kind of have to have a car or to get back on campus, or you're kind of walking 40 minutes, right? The other thing is that our bus lines only go to, I think it's 8 or 9 p.m. So, for example, if you have a lab that goes until 9, how are you gonna get back if you're from Science 1 and you live in Buckley, right? And how are you gonna have that safe transportation? So, one of our ideas with Uber was we wanted to have provide subsidized Ubers for students so that once it hits 9 p.m., once it hits like 8 p.m., like from 8 p.m. to, for example, like 4 a.m. in the morning, students will get subsidized rides. It's kind of like how web printing works, where you have like $15 of free money to spend, because I think it also helps reduce drunk driving and all those incidents, right? And I think that this could be a really cool way for the university to kind of fill the gap of transportation needs during the nighttime, but not have buses running 24/7, right? Because I think that is like the other alternative you can look at.
Right.
The other thing that the university is looking at and that we're trying to work with is bringing scooters to campus. Because right now how it works is we have all these scooter companies. They dropped all these different scooters on campus. So like you just see them like littered around everywhere. And so students kind of just spend a, so like how it works is that students kind of, it's kind of like you just pay, you leave the meter running where you just kind of I guess pay and then you just keep going until you stop. And so the result of that is that, like, if students want to stop in, like, the middle of the road, like, the scooter just is left in the middle of the road, right? And so I think it also is the difficulty of these scooters really aren't that safe. Like, there's no one regulating the speed. There's no one really telling them how fast or slow they can go. And so right now what we're trying to do is we're working with a company that will hopefully come onto campus, drop off their scooters, and those scooters will be speed gated. So they'll be like, for example, in certain places, they'll be like 25 miles per hour. If you're on a road or main road, they'll be like 10 miles per hour. If there's a lot of traffic, we can change that. We can also change like where you can like leave it. So for example, I think the way that it happens with the scooters right now is that if you don't want to ride it, you kind of just leave it where it is. But with these scooters, what we're hoping to do is that we have these designated drop-off locations so that if you don't drop it off in the designated drop-off location, you're just going to keep getting charged. So this way that people will have a spot, so it's not just an eyesore across campus. The other thing that we hope that this kind of addresses is that with more and more students getting cars, with more and more students needing parking, we're having a lot of like we're having a lot of parking lots that are like off on the sides of campus, so like more on the outside of campus. So, for example, I think the what a lot of students are doing right now is that they park on the outskirts of campus and then they bus in. And so we're hoping that this also kind of fills that gap where we have these students who need these cars, who need parking passes, but we can't build more parking lots in the central area of campus. So what we do is we'll build them on the outskirts of campus and we'll have these scooter lots be close to those areas so that they can park and then scooter in. Because I think that is something that we're hoping that we can address because like the smart booths, right? There is a lot of issues with parking, and I think the university is looking for a lot of different ways to address both how do we reduce illegal parking, but also how do we make sure that students have transportation into campus, and also how do we get rid of this scooter eyesore that we see flying around, right? Because I think it is a bit of a dangerous problem where I hope that I think that some students possibly could get injured, whether it's the person riding the scooter themselves or the person who's potentially getting hit by the scooters. And so I think that this is hopefully going to address that problem, and I'm really excited for this because the university has been really, I think, really collaborative in this effort of getting Uber and this partnership, and I think they're really excited about it as well. So I'm just hoping that it comes soon enough for the spring so I can see it. And that kind of ties into a lot of the stuff where we're doing so much of this stuff, and I'm just hoping that I'm able to see some of the changes, because that it happens across such large timescales, and I'm just hoping I'm able to see it in the spring.
And really quick, because we are, you know, our showtime is almost up. Is there anything going on in your realm, Billy, of any initiatives that you've been working on?
So myself and the external affairs director, Olivia Eshu at USG, we are pretty much finalizing our contract with UConn Brand Partnerships, UConn Career Center, and the Goodwill for, I believe, Northeastern Connecticut.
Okay.
That's their region. We are working on the professional clothing closet. That was sort of piloted last spring by the previous comptroller and the previous external affairs director. And, you know, we got a lot of great data out of it, and we saw a lot of students served. We think that it was a really great initiative that a lot of students took advantage of and, you know, was beneficial. So, you know, over the summer, myself and Liv worked really hard to kind of bring all these different entities together to make the clothing closet, you know, more than it was in the spring, building upon that, right? So, we're excited. We're launching, I believe, September 29th.
Okay.
The partnership with the Career Center is really exciting because they'll be providing staffing and other resources for us. We're looking into potential sponsorships, which is really exciting. It's really great. They've got a lot of great connections and resources, which is really awesome. You know, we're very grateful to Brand Partnerships, Kyle Muncy's office, for providing us the space and also facilitating that communication between USG and Goodwill. And what's really great too is this is at no cost to USG. We're getting the clothes for free from Goodwill.
That's amazing.
It's really awesome. You know, it's and it's a great resource, you know, for career fairs and in the business school and whatnot. And I think we've last year, I believe it was that students were able to take three articles of clothing. We have increased that. We're doing a credit system, so you'll get 11 credits. I believe it's on a per semester basis. It might be on the academic year. I'll have to check with Liv. But instead of, you know, just three articles of clothing, you get 11 credits, and the clothing items are all on a different
credit system.
So I believe like a business casual dress would be like 5 credits, but you know, if you want to get like a blouse and pants, it'd be like 3 and 2 or whatnot.
Gotcha.
So you get to pick and choose. You might get a little more, you might get a little less, depending on, you know, what you end up using your 11 credits on. But it makes it a little bit more equitable, because you know, it doesn't make sense that a tie is the same cost as a sport jacket, right? So we're hoping that that'll kind of mitigate some of the concerns of, like, you know, by the end of the year, there's nothing left.
Yeah.
And what's cool, too, is we'll be getting shipments throughout the school year.
Oh, that's great.
So it'll constantly be replenished, and that's really exciting. So
yeah.
And quick plug, I think it's going to be opening on the first day of the career fair. So
I believe is the first day.
If someone with a career fair and they need professional clothing, you can just stop by the bookstore, I think is where it's going to be. And you can pick some
up. Second floor.
Yeah, second floor.
Okay.
And then also there's free headshots in Wilbur, I think, as well. So once you get your professional clothing, you can head on over to Wilbur to get your headshot and then go on to the career fair.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on and talking a bit about what you guys have been working on and what initiatives you guys have been starting and kind of how that whole system works. It's been great having you guys, and we'll have you back on in 2 weeks.
Thank you
so much. Thank you again.
Yeah. So thank you all for tuning in this morning. A special thank you to our news partners, the Daily Campus UConn Student Newspaper and UCTV UConn Student Television Station. A special thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I'm Katie Service.
I'm Rhea Kowalski.
And I'm Vinny Carbone.
And you have been listening to Husky Nation News on WHUS Stores on 91.7 FM. Catch you next week, Husky Nation.